Welcome to the Foreign Mom Podcast, a place where you won't be judged for having an accent or making the occasional grammar mistake. And doing things differently might even give you success in motherhood or in your career. I'm Eveline Poro, a mother of two from Brazil, and together we are going to meet some of the most amazing women from all over the globe who live here in the UK and are excelling themselves. Hello, my dears. I hope you're well. I'm sorry for the silence last week, but unfortunately, I had a good reason to stay in silence and quiet for a moment. For those of you who follow me on Instagram or Facebook, you must have heard the sad news of my dad passing in Brazil. He had coronavirus and on a Saturday was admitted to hospital, and by Monday night, he was gone. It felt to me like a car crash, and not being able to go back due to the restrictions was a big kick in the teeth. It is understated to say the least that it was a bad week. But thank God I have an amazing husband, children, family, and friends who helped me to get through this dark time. Thank God this podcast is also full of amazing women who also contributed to help me pick up the pieces. And this week's guest is the perfect example of women supporting women. Besides being a lovely Australian, Olivia has moved to the UK with her husband and son, and within 10 months, she has set up her own coaching business to help professional women and new moms to accelerate their careers and achieve work-life balance. Olivia is going to explain how she helps other women as well as how she became a coach herself. So here is this fabulous Australian. Hello, Olivia. Thank you so much for being able to be here at the Foreign Mom Podcast. You're my second Australian, but my first women in leadership trainer.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Eveline. I'm so happy to be here with you today.
So, Olivia, I know you have been doing a fantastic job here in the UK, and I wanted to understand, where did this come from? Because firstly, I want to ask, what's the reason that made you move to the UK to start with?
Yeah, so this is actually the third time that I have moved to the UK. So the first time was when I came on, we call it a gap year, when I worked in a boarding school up in the north of England. The second time was when I came and did my working holiday visa, which lots of Australians do. We come to the UK to work for a couple of years and have, you know, an absolute blast doing that. And this is now the third time where I have moved back with my husband, who is British. I met him the second time I moved there, and now we live here with my son as well, George, and he's 2.5.
Oh, lovely. So basically, you met your husband and then you kept that long distance relationship, and then either he would have to move there or you would have to move here. So why did you choose coming here instead of him going there?
Well, he came to Australia for 7 years. Yeah. So after my holiday visa finished, I moved back to Australia, and then a year later he followed me, and we spent 7 years living in Bondi by the beach. It was fantastic. We had a wonderful time, and then we decided, for him, he works in finance, and so for him, London is the center of the world, and so we thought that we would move back, and I love being here as well. So it feels like the perfect time for us to be here in the UK, for us as a family.
I see, because I've always, for instance, if in Brazil they spoke English as first language, I think my husband would have been quite happy to move there, right? So there are so many English people. I have an old friend who's moved there to Australia exactly because of the weather, you know, especially. So, and I guess it's sort of similar-ish, right? And I bet it was more of a shock for you in terms of having to get adapted to the weather and everything else, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do find the winters very long and very cold. But there are some differences in language, which are quite funny. Sometimes my husband and I will be having conversations. So, for example, one day he was talking about putting my son in a pair of dungarees, and I didn't know what he was talking about. And I said, oh, you mean overalls? And he said, yes, dungarees. And so we have sometimes these funny moments of where English people and Australian people use a different language. Another one is for women, we say, or in Australia, we say a bobby pin, which is like a clip, you know, for your hair. And here they say a hair grip. So it's like these little things. You go to the chemist and say, can I have some bobby pins? And they look at you blankly and have no idea what you're talking about. So it is quite funny that there are a few little language differences. And I guess the other good thing of being here is that you're so close to Europe and all of these other countries, whereas in Australia you're very much removed. But in saying that, there are so many different places to visit in Australia. It's a hugely diverse country, from the coast to the desert. You can see so much and explore. So it really is an amazing country to travel around as well. So there are benefits to both.
And what made you bring from home that you keep in your house that makes you feel a bit closer to your nation, than that it's like a little piece of Australia in your household?
Yeah. Oh, Evelyn, we included a huge container full of items because I wanted things. So there's three things that really help me to connect to home. So the first is I have a lot of Aboriginal art that my mother has given me, and there's one that's above me now that's in our kitchen. It's where I work as well, and it's called The Seven Sisters, and it's a very famous ancient story, but it's really about women coming together. I hope I'm getting that right, by the way. So, but she mentioned, you know, to me and has given me a lot of Aboriginal art to help me to feel connected back to Australia. And also because the colours are so vibrant and so beautiful. It's such a lovely thing to have, you know, in your home when it's grey outside, and these beautiful, mainly dot paintings is what I have, which is a specific type of Aboriginal art. They really uplift my heart. The second thing that I have is I inherited a few things from my grandfather when he passed away, and it was just so lovely to bring some of his furniture. So I have his coffee table that is makes me feel like he is part of our family, and it was always a part of our family. Growing up, for all of my cousins, we all used to sit around this coffee table and have breakfast and dinner. So it's a huge part of my family's history to have that table. And then the third thing that I have is a big trunk, which is a big chest that was on a property on a farm that my mum owns. And she thinks that it might have been brought out to Australia within kind of the first years of Australia being settled, kind of 200 years ago. So I decided to bring it back. It's got the word Sydney written on it, you know, kind of very old cursive writing. So there was sort of a joke between, you know, my family about bringing the chest, you know, back to its home, back to England. So those are the three main things that helped me to feel really connected to home.
That's so lovely to hear, because I know I have a few Brazilian friends who have got a few artworks, but to actually have on top of artworks pieces of you know, something that belonged to your family, it's also really nice. I have to admit, I have what's the name of the thing that you put the candles in?
Like a candlestick holder.
Yeah, candle holder, but the three type, you know, quite elegant one. Basically, I brought them over. I brought two of them, and they used to belong to my grandparents. And I used them on my wedding day, exactly as it was like the representation that my grandparents were there with us at my wedding. So that felt really special. It was the centerpiece, different from all the other tables, and it felt so special to have that there with me. So it is.
These symbols are so important for us, for our connection to home. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to get some like Brazilian artwork. The few last times I've been with children and stuff, I've never really stopped to look at properly and to think, you know, through. But I've actually bought my children some of the old things I used to play with that you can't actually get here as well.
Wow.
So there is this piece of wood thing that you literally just squeeze and then the man goes up and down. Something so simple. But my son goes, Mama, that's my Brazilian toy. So, you know, it makes it special and it makes it sweet that we can have a few touches, right, around the house for us to remind where we come from. But what Absolutely. About food? What do you miss the most? Because I've seen Vegemite all over the supermarkets now. So I don't think you miss Vegemite anymore. Or you
know. No. I miss seafood. So obviously you can get fantastic seafood here, but the seafood, because the water is different, the salt is different. So I really miss Australian seafood. We eat a lot of seafood in my family and I love seafood. So I really miss having that. And I find the avocados here don't have quite the same taste and flavor. Probably because they've been shipped from somewhere and frozen along the way. So if you ever get to Australia, please have some Australian avocados because the flavor is incredible and they are just so delicious and they're grown locally. And those are the two things that I miss the most. Yeah.
That's interesting. My husband, he's on Instagram. He's only got one picture and it's a picture of my son. And he's holding a Brazilian avocado right next to my son's head because the avocado in Brazil is like the same size of a child's head. Oh. Is the Australian one as big as well?
Yeah. I think the UK imports avocados from Brazil, don't they? I'm sure Tesco or someone.
I mean, not that I've paid attention anyways on the sticker, but because the ones here are quite small. And they're too perfect. Yes. And the Brazilian ones over there, I don't think I can ever buy the small ones, always the massive ones. So are the Australian ones quite big as well?
Yes, quite big and full of flavor. As I said, they've got a really amazing taste and you don't need to really have anything with them. You can just, you know, kind of eat them out of the shell, you know, their flesh, or you can have them on toast, perfect breakfast.
So interesting. Good to know. So how many years have you been now in London? For good?
18 months this last time, but it feels like time has been very strange with lockdown. I'm sure you have too. I can't quite work out if I'm up or down at the moment.
I see. So does it mean that your son, was he born still in Australia?
Yes, he was born in Australia. So he is Australian. We have a joke that my son and me are Australian and we outnumber my husband, who is British, in our household. So he was 11 months old when we moved to, actually we moved to my parents-in-law in France. We lived with them for a couple of months while all our things were being shipped from Australia, and we had the most wonderful time living with them in France, and they were getting to know George as well. And then we moved to London and we're very lucky to find a house to live in, and everything fell into place really easily, which was fantastic.
I see. So when you had your son, your mom was still quite involved in helping you, or not as much?
Yeah, well, both my parents, all my dad, my stepmom, my mom, my stepdad, my sister, my stepsisters, all very much involved in George's life and helping me when I was, you know, working late or George was unwell. So they were very involved. They miss him a lot. And everyone is looking forward to us at some point being able to get back to Australia. But it's virtually impossible at the moment. Or, you know, they'll be able to come here and see our life in London. It's definitely different not having as much family support in London. I really do miss that. But at the same time, we have a very good life here. So, yeah, no, can't complain. And I really look forward to holidays together as well, which will be really special. So, yeah.
So when, since you had the opportunity to share him with your parents and then right after with your in-laws, could you tell differences in ways or that you believe it's part of cultural, or you think it's just like differences from people's personalities? In terms of like the treatment from your mom's, let's say, to your mother-in-law, for instance. So my mom and my mother-in-law, they both obviously love my children to bits. But my mom is like, oh, don't let leave this child to cry, you know, I'll just cuddle him here and stuff. And my mother-in-law is more of the, why are you crying about, you know, you need to toughen up a bit and stuff like this. And also my mom is like, oh, I'll just rock him to sleep. And my mother-in-law will go, oh, let's try to see if he'll settle by himself, sort of things. So
yes,
I keep thinking because Australians in English speak English and they come sort of culturally speaking similar-ish. So is there much cultural differences or do you think it's more personal?
No, yeah, that's a really good question. No, I think there's only really no differences in country. No real cultural differences. It's really interesting what you were saying. No, I think because as you were saying, that kind of English and Australian culture is more similar. So yes, I think you're right. There isn't really a difference in the way that they kind of interact. Not in the way that you've just described, certainly.
Mm-hmm. I see. So that's good to hear. But I don't know if you had much of a chance to experience also motherhood in London before lockdown with him by taking him to groups and things like this. Is there such a thing in Australia? Like all the baby singing, all the baby classes and things like this?
Yes, yes, yes. We used to, when I was on maternity leave, George and I used to go to music classes and sometimes swimming as well, and sometimes swimming with my parents. Unfortunately, because we were only here for was sort of a few months before the lockdown started, so we did go to our local library, which has fantastic morning classes, so he would go to those. But now he's in nursery 4 days a week, so he's kind of there. The weekends, I'm not sure about you, but have certainly been a little bit challenging in respect of, okay, what can we do this weekend to make things, you know, a bit interesting? And but often we find there are fun things to do, like make pancakes or go to the park. I definitely know most parents are feeling like we've been to the park so many times over the last few months and it's difficult when it's cold. But we've also been doing some work on our back garden, which George loves to get involved with all sorts of things. So we've tried to keep it a little bit interesting, but some weekends it's definitely been hard to think about creating something new or finding something a bit different or even just having a new book to read, you know, because even that we've sort of read a lot of his books over and over and over again. But, you know, these are sort of the small things. I think also that, you know, so many parents have been really stressed in lockdown and really difficult, like yourself, around having to homeschool and things like that. We've been so lucky that we haven't had to go through that. We've been able to keep our jobs and to keep working. So I really feel for those parents like yourself who've had to juggle everything, because that's very hard and stressful and tiring and everything else. So I think we're lucky in that respect.
Yeah, I actually, this is the first interview I'm doing this year in daytime. You know, all the previous interviews have been nighttime, because, you know, otherwise I would have no silence whatsoever. And so, you know, I had to wait until my son was back at school, and my daughter today is back at school. So for the first time, it's like, you know, no noise whatsoever at home. So I'm very grateful for this for the first time. But having said that, the children keeps the normality in the household, right? So it's what helped me with my grieving and everything else that I have gone through in the past week. But I was wondering as well, how did you manage to go in 18 months to develop such an impressive program for women that has already been, you know, so praised for your clients, that has already caught the eye of so many companies? Did you already do exactly that in Australia, or did you manage to start it from scratch here based on your previous experiences?
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Evelyn. So I created the Women's Vault. It was this time last year that I was starting to think about what I could do, because the corporate job that I was about to be given, working in a multinational insurance company doing their corporate communications and working with the CEO on his communications, was put on hold because of COVID. And as so many people experienced, either they were furloughed or the jobs that they were expecting just got put on hold. And at the time, we all thought that it was going to be a few months. And so I thought, well, I need to do something in this time to keep me busy. But also I thought it was a great opportunity to expand some of my skills and learn things like social media, which I really hadn't, you know, done much of in my career. And so I decided to create an online course for women to help them to return to work. And for women who are in professional jobs, who are lawyers, marketing managers, those sorts of jobs that are busy and fast-paced and demanding. And a lot of my clients are actually in male-dominated industries. And I worked with a lot of men working in banking as well. And so I created this course as sort of like an online course, and create an Instagram page and a very simple website. And the women who completed the course then started to say, can you coach me? Can I have one-to-one coaching with you? And what that has developed into is programs for women, bespoke coaching for women. So, for example, one of my clients who I've been working with recently, she is a lawyer in a firm and had to do a pitch to become a partner in her firm. And she was pitching to 8 males. And she was really anxious around how was she going to present herself and how was she going to come across as herself in a really genuine way and present her business case. So we spent the last few weeks working on her presentation, her key messages, working on stories that made her really relatable, working on what her vision is for her area within the partnership, so how she's going to build up that business. And then obviously how she, you know, was going to communicate that within that presentation. So that draws on a lot of the skills that I have learned being a executive advisor, advising on communications and business strategy. So in a way, a lot of the work that I do has morphed from being a woman who is helping other women to return to work to also helping women with very big presentations, speeches, workshops. So I'm now doing workshops on presentation skills and personal brand. And that is now evolving into companies now asking me to come in and do this for their employees. So it has grown and evolved hugely over the past year. And I think that's interesting in a lot of ways, because what I set out to achieve and what I set out to do is now quite different. And I'm really enjoying just being on that journey and letting the opportunities unfold and really having the confidence to back myself and say, yes, I can do this. Yes, I'm going to go for it, which is something that I really love to help my clients with as well, is to really believe in themselves.
I'm just very curious to hear, what type of women are looking for you mostly, English or foreigners?
Oh, interesting question. Mainly English, and mainly women who are, a lot of women who are working in male-dominated industries, so finance, the legal sector, because it seems to be at the top of the legal sector. There's a lot of men and not as many women. and commercial real estate, mining. I work with women in mining back in Australia, but I have worked with executives in the past and things like who have come from different countries and who are nervous about their accent or nervous about how they come across or don't know how to communicate their stories. And what I mean by their stories is the story that we communicate to a corporate audience, to a in a professional setting, that makes you relatable and makes people understand who you are, what you're about, and where you want, you know, the company or your department to head in. So it's really powerful and really empowering work that I do with women.
Because it's so interesting to hear that, but I guess because you deal with the women who are already at a certain level, right, in their careers. So that's why presumably they are mostly English. But for instance, I have a Brazilian friend who's been in England for quite a long time now and who's had good jobs. But she, a couple of years ago, applied for this job within the NHS. And when she said, on the day of the interview, she was the only foreigner and everybody else seemed English. She was like, I have no chance here. I'm just gonna do it for, I'm already here anyways. And she was the one selected. And she was like, what? Because, you know, you automatically, by being foreigner, and particularly I think foreigners from when the English is the second language, you know, and when we feel a bit more intimidated in an interview because we're terrified of making grammar mistakes sort of thing. So she said that she raised that whilst she was already hired, right, to her boss. And she goes, but there was nothing to do. I never even considered, you know, the difference between you, the fact that you are a foreigner and the fact that the others were English. It's about the potential you can bring to the company, the extras that you can give, not the fact that you speak English as a first language or not. But do you feel this is a one-off, this my friend situation, or do you feel that yes, foreign women should stop this stigma in their minds that they are inferior?
Yes, oh my gosh, definitely. I have worked with a few clients who have felt really self-conscious of their accent, have felt very self-conscious of their language, and so won't speak up in meetings, won't put their hand up to do presentations. So yes, I think that the story of your friend that you just shared is really amazing and really inspiring, and it shows you that it can be done. And yeah, I would say don't question yourself. Just keep believing in yourself and believing in your abilities, and get really comfortable talking about your strengths. Get comfortable talking about your career highlights. So, for example, I did a workshop last week on presentation skills. And one of the points that I made was that you need to always be raising your brand and what you are good at, even to internal stakeholders. So one of the things that women working in a corporate setting don't do is when they're presenting internally to a group of people they already know, they become complacent and they don't necessarily say at the start of the presentation, I want to talk to you about this because in my experience, this doesn't play out well for our company, or in my experience, our competitors are doing X, Y, and Z, or this situation touched me personally, and that's why I want to talk to you about this today. But first, I'm going to tell you my personal story about this situation. So all of those ways can help to really boost and to build your brand. And for women who aren't from, or are English as a second language, you can develop things like your key messages, your story or your stories, and get really comfortable in telling those, and then use that as like momentum to push you forward into speaking opportunities, into going for job interviews of your dream job, of presenting internally, of asking a senior stakeholder out for a coffee. All of those things you can do to keep feeling positive and to remind yourself that you're exceptionally capable, you're exceptionally clever, and that, like what your friend experienced, they were more interested in her capabilities. Her accent didn't even need to come into it. So I think we're all incredibly self-critical and self, you know, have this consciousness, but the minute you can rise above that and change your mindset about that, you know, you can achieve amazing things. Your confidence can either hold you back or it can push you forward.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. And that's why I set this podcast up, because, you know, in the previous job opportunities I had in the past here in this country, you know, it was picked on my writing, particularly, you know, about the writing mistakes I made. And that really affected me. But now I feel a bit more confident, although I use my English husband as my sub-editor to make sure, you know, that the mistakes are being corrected. And, you know, as on the podcast itself, I don't care. I think we all have got the potential, and it's about who we are and what we do, rather than like a language difference. If we can make ourselves clear and understood, you know, that will show up, see us through anything. And that's why I decided to make this, to make all the foreign women relate to their potential, and to make them believe that anything is possible, even if we are doing it in a second language. But one interesting thing that I also want to learn from you is that, what's your university degree?
Oh, in communications, so arts and communications, yes. Yeah. So I studied communications and organizational communication. So in Australia, you very much study the vocation that you want to go into. And the university that I went to was known for being the top in Australia for journalism, for advertising, for communications. I had a brilliant head lecturer there who'd worked in lots of fantastic corporate jobs and really gave us an insight into what it would be like, because your role is it's a very demanding role. It's a very fast-paced role. You're right in the mix of helping to make decisions that matter for a company's reputation, what their shareholders are concerned about. So quite often you're kind of a voice of reason, of objectivity, which can be difficult. And like I was saying before, you're often working with very senior people, and you're often, you know, I was often a confidant or someone who they could trust, but I also wasn't afraid to give advice when that didn't necessarily go down always, you know, so well, but I wasn't afraid to do that. And I think that's why I was able to excel in my job, and I loved it too. I absolutely loved it. So and right now I'm about to start a contract job doing compressed hours, where I will work in the afternoons in that job doing my vocation, and in the mornings I will be doing the women's vault. So it's going to be quite an interesting ride over the next few months, but I'm really excited, and really excited to bring all of these new skills that I have learned, similar to, you know, like what you've learned with creating your podcast. You learn all these amazing new things and have all these different insights. So I'm really pleased to have that opportunity.
So for anyone interested in doing what you're doing as well, because you had this amazing background, but you had to literally start from scratch in 18 months. And for you to get where you are already, it's quite fascinating, you know, it's really impressive. So do you think you were proactive to reach out to companies and to potential clients, or you simply started like putting your word out there on social media and got some attention, and that's how it always started? If anyone, because I know you don't like the term coach, but it is a sort of a coaching experience that you're putting people through. So that's why I wanted, if anyone would be interested in relating and currently going through like coaching training, yes, because I know some women who are currently doing this.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's been less time than that. It's been sort of 10 months since I've been operating officially. Really, what I started with was creating this online course. I did a course, how to create a course, and then deciding that I would speak to 20-25 women I spoke to both in Australia and in the UK, and I asked them to take components of the course. So each of them got a few lessons. They then provided a whole lot of very detailed feedback to me, and it was generally very positive. So I decided, well, I'm going to see if I can sell this and put this out there. And alongside that, I started coaching some friends who had said, I'm interested in what you're doing, or I think you might be able to help me with something. So that really helped me to feel so much more confident in my skills, and yes, to coach, to mentor, to guide, to be an objective perspective in their life and the things that they were talking to me about. And then in terms of the organizations that I'm working with, they have been mainly through introductions of my clients. So my clients have said, I know this person, I did some work with them, can they come and do some coaching, some group coaching or a workshop for us? And in other cases, a recruitment company contacted me and said, can you do some 7 workshops for our clients and candidates? They have about 25,000 followers on LinkedIn, which is just extraordinary. And someone who attended that has then since got in touch to say, can you come and talk to us as part of our International Women's Day celebrations for the month of March? So, and that's obviously for all employees. It's not just for women. So I think really, there has been strategy behind what I've wanted to do and how I've wanted to grow and evolve. But also it's really kind of thinking about what are all of the different areas of skills that I have and how can I bring that? And also some of the coaching that I was doing initially is quite different to what I'm doing now. And what I mean by that is I know what coaching sessions really light me up. I know what clients really light me up. I know what clients, unfortunately, I have to say no to because I know we're not going to be a good connection. I know we're not going to click. So that's really kind of important too. And that takes time to work out. And I think that, you know, what you put in, you get back. And I put in an enormous amount of energy every single day. I have worked with my own coach. She's a business coach, and she's helped me to sort of set up some of the fundamental parts of running a business and also be really clear on my niche and the women that I want to serve and that I want to work with as well. And by the way, I do have a couple of male clients.
Good.
If you know, working with them on things like interview skills, which is just a different type of presentation skill. So if anyone's looking to get into that area, then I would say do what training you can, but be really quick to, and not quick in a not considered way, but you need to move with speed, and you need to also not be able to spend hours and hours and hours thinking about a product because it actually may not work. So what I've found has worked really well is that I've offered a few different types of programs, a few different types of products, and I know now what, and actually I'm still even learning, what things resonate with people. So for example, last year I offered a negotiation masterclass and I was surprised so few people took it up. But I think I've now delivered it quite a few times. I know what really interests people from that specific masterclass. And so now I can share that in a way that's more meaningful and more interesting. And I know what parts within the presentation to really focus on and spend time on. And I think all of that comes from actually doing it. So you've got to get out there and do and be very visible if you're working behind closed doors and no one can see what you're working on, or you're spending hours and hours developing products and getting it perfect, your business isn't going to survive. So that's certainly in my experience and what I've learned. And I didn't have a huge pot of money sitting there waiting, or an investor sitting there waiting. I had to really maximize every opportunity. So
that's
a really long answer.
And no, but I think it's like everything somebody would need to hear, because, you know, I had previous guests here who were in a different career, but were exactly taking courses and things to becoming a coach. So I do hope this help, and, you know, anyone out there, both sides of the coin, you know, from the perspective of becoming potentially your customer, as well as like where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you're clearly developing and you're clearly growing and you're clearly, you know, being successful. So that's why, you know, you clearly in the right path and the right person to talk to from the career point of view or from the client point of view. So thank you so much for coming here to talk to me and
give great tips
on both sides as well. It's been very, very nice to have you along.
Oh, I've absolutely loved it. And just being able to connect with other women from across London and women who aren't here. The other thing, Evelini, just one other point that I wanted to share was that when I moved back to the UK this third time, I was quite anxious because a lot of my friends who were here when I was here previously have moved home, or they've moved to different parts of London, or, you know, and I didn't have my mother's group. My mother's group are all back in Australia. And I was really nervous about who will be my friend? Who will I be able to have coffee with? And I think one of the best things that has come out of the Women's Vault and my business is I have created this incredible community of women who are so inspiring and, I mean, of course, have their own challenges. Being able to connect with those women and to form friendships with some of them, and even just to have a very respectful relationship in a client sense as well. So I had lunch with one of my clients last year, just before lockdown. We managed to get it in. And she's from Australia originally. She has a son as well. She has a top job at Amazon. And we've totally connected and really care about each other. And I think that people like that and my other clients as well, we've just been able to form this community around us, and I've been able to meet people like yourself who I know that I will stay in touch with. And I would just say, if there's any woman who's listening, who's about to move countries or is nervous or is thinking, oh, I haven't been able to make that many friends because of lockdown, please know that you can always find women in your community, and women are always talking on Facebook, on Instagram. Just reach out to someone and say, can we go for a walk or a coffee in the park or something? And you would be surprised at how the other person would say, oh my gosh, I'd love to. I've been thinking that as well. So, and I think that, if you know, anyone is feeling lonely or wants to get in touch and they want to become part of the Women's Vault, then just reach out to me, because there are women from all over the world involved in this. So it can be really helpful when you need it.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Another lovely tip. And especially for these tough times you may be feeling isolated, as well as not being able to see anybody in person. So that's a great way of, showing other women that you don't need to be alone, because there are other women like themselves that who
are. There are so many women.
Great. So thank you so much, Olivia. I really appreciate it.
And pleasure.
I do hope that one day when everything opens up, that I will be able to meet you in person. And
yes, that would be wonderful.
Big event for all the lovely women out there.
Yes, that would be wonderful. And all the women who feature on your podcast to come together as well. I was thinking that would be a really fun party.
That's my dream. That's my dream, proper dream. Thank you so much, my dear. Really appreciate
it. Thank you.
If you like my mom's podcast, please subscribe and leave it review.